on Talk Radio 98.5 and 1240 WRTA. It's WRTA Weekend. Doug Herendeen with us. Not the colonies. They're on vacation as you hear this. They will be back next month. But a couple of times we're going to get to talk with John Kaysen. You may read his articles in the Altoona Mirror, an occasional letter to the editor, and he's done commentaries over the years, and he's been on this station. He calls in on some of the talk shows as well. How often are you in the Mirror? When do they have the columns?
I run every month in the Mirror. Once a month. Normally, toward the end of the month, they vary the publication date. I mail it in. They put it in whenever they want. But it's normally runs toward the end of the month, normally in the weekend edition. And then I also do the Allegheny Adventure supplement for them twice a year. That's kind of focused on the outdoors, outdoor-related subjects. One of those is coming up again, I think, toward the end of July. So we've been in business together quite a while.
So you can watch for John Kaysen in print there and hear him occasionally on WRTA. We're going to do a couple shows this summer, and one of them is called Who Do You Trust? And I stole that from an old Johnny Carson TV series, and it predates him, actually. The original was on radio with Edgar Bergen, believe it or not, and Charlie McCarthy and some of his cohorts, and it was called Do You Trust Your Wife? And it's meant to sound more salacious than it was. The way it worked was you had somebody come on, there's always the husband who is the main player of the game, and the wife is the backup. It's like the lifeline before there was a lifeline. And they'd ask a question, do you trust your wife to answer the question correctly, or would you like to answer it? And depending upon what you did, you made more or less money. So that's where Carson met McMahon, and they went off to the Tonight Show, and the show went off somewhere around 62 when he did. But who do you trust, I figure, is something that we, I don't know, these days, everybody says these days, but there's always been trust problems and solutions all through history. You had some interesting ones, John Kaysen. What did you come up with?
Well, actually, one of the first ones I thought about, and it was, let's say, an hour ago when I was sitting at home. I cleaned up, took a shower, was coming in here. I even shaved, and I forgot it was a radio show.
Well, I shave, and it's radio, so yeah. Whatever.
So anyway, I got to thinking, and I said, you know, Doug didn't call me. He didn't send me an email to remind me.
Mm-hmm.
He must trust me.
Yeah.
I mean, he pretty much figured I was going to be here.
Right.
Or otherwise, he'd be saying something slightly different right now. I'd be all alone here in the studio. So trust is an interesting thing, and it's a life experience. It's based upon our personal experience, and it's very important for all of us, and especially for the young people who are graduating high school here now or very a short time ago. They don't have the life experience yet. They do have some experiences. They don't have the life experiences to really decide, who do you trust? Can I trust this person? Because from that high school graduation on, you're going to be involved in some pretty heavy decisions and responsibilities. And
I would just say, if anybody has made it to the age of 18 or even 12 in this country, if you haven't had a situation where you trusted somebody and they did you dirty, you're not living in the real world yet. You're living in a very sheltered world, and bless you for that, but it's going to come back to bite you later.
Yes, and the magnitude of the bite gets bigger as you get older.
Yeah.
Because now you're talking about a financial decision or purchasing a home or purchasing a car. That's a real good example. So, yes, who do you trust is something we all need to take into account, and how do we learn those things, and can you value your own judgment?
Well, going with your idea there, it's kind of difficult to think about because experience is a teacher. And until you've gone, you can have all the textbook learning you want. You can have all the theoreticals you want until you go out and do it. Until you buy a house, it's not the same. Until you buy a car, it's not the same. Until you get married, it's not the same. Everything is a theoretical until you try it. Until you go into the service, it's not the same. Until you take that job that somebody pitched you as being a fantastic one and you find out it's a disaster and you should have taken the other one. All that is based on the experience, based on what you're saying.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The service is a wonderful example. And my time in the service, I met people, and everybody does this, I met people I never knew existed before. I mean, because you're in such a conglomerate of people. They're all from all over the place, and you're all thrust into the same cubicle, so to speak. So you run into some very nice people. You run into some real characters, and you've got to kind of sort them out to find out what's going on.
My dad told me the stories about that when he was in the Army Air Corps, which he got into not thinking, I'm going to fight in World War II, because he got in before World War II existed, and it was not the Air Force, it was the Army Air Corps.
Yep.
He just wanted to fly planes, and he thought, well, this is a good way to learn and serve your country at the same time, not thinking, oh, well, a year later, what he was going to be doing. So, yeah, some of the people he met, the stories we could tell, but we take this totally off topic here to do that. But I'm sure you relate to that.
Oh, yes, definitely. So that's a piece of learning experience. Getting a job's another piece.
Yeah.
Because normally getting a job, you're into a strange environment with several people, or sometimes a lot of people. And who do you trust? How do you work your way through that maze? How do you know who's telling you the truth? What information can you rely on, et cetera? So who do you trust is a very simple phrase for a very complicated subject.
Well, here's the thing. I worked with a guy, I just thought of this, and I hadn't before him, but it fits perfectly. This is going to sound a little crass, but quite frankly, it's G-rated compared to everything else these days. He had an expression, do you know how many people were born on a trust me?
Yeah, exactly.
He was not necessarily a trusting type, and he would use that as a definition or an excuse why he was not a trusting type, although he didn't have the personal experience there. But it happens.
You know, when you mentioned marriage a while ago, you said buying a car, getting married, et cetera. I thought about that before coming in today also. How many divorces were they based upon you made a bad decision? Or you trusted the wrong person. It could go either way.
And, or you trusted the wrong thing that you were compatible in.
Yes. Or you trusted.
Do we really have to explain that? I don't think we have to explain that beyond that.
No. It even comes down to, can you trust yourself? You know.
Well, that's a question I had. That I'll bring up later as a specific example of something that happened. And we can also use it on a future show. We're going to talk about, are we getting dumber? That's on a future show.
Yeah.
Be thinking about that. And Doug at LightnerRadio.com if you have anything you want to contribute to it. But we're talking with John Kasin about trust. I'll give you an example of something. And I don't know if I was younger, if I would have had any different reaction to this. Because my parents raised me to think critically. I don't always do it, but sometimes it's saved my butt. And sometimes I've ignored that at my own peril. And this is going to sound ridiculous. What do you care? You're an adult. What do you care about this? This was about 2 months ago. It's about 60 degrees, 10 o'clock at night. I'm getting out of the supermarket, and I'm loading the car. And I've got extra groceries because I'm going to drop some off somewhere. And I got to be somewhere at a certain time, believe it or not, at that hour to do it. But these two kids come up to me. I say the girl's about 12 to 13. They say, hey, can you give us a ride to the bus station downtown? And they are soon joined about five other kids. They're all 12 to 13. I'm guessing if one was 14, that would be stretching it, boys and girls. And they said, well, there's a curfew. Now, number one, were you aware there's a curfew in this town?
No.
But apparently there is. I checked with several people, and some people said yes, some people said no. I'm not sure what to believe, but enough people said, yeah, there's a curfew if you're under a certain age. So it's 10 o'clock. They want to walk from the supermarket to downtown, to the bus station downtown, and they don't want to walk because it's 60 degrees and the wind is like 40 miles per hour. So it's cold, and some of them are not necessarily wearing jackets that would do anything to help them. And I'm like, my first thought is, yeah, what would it hurt? The second thought is, I've got all this stuff piled in the back seat. Oh, we can hold it. Don't worry. Okay, so I'm going to put five human beings in the back seat behind me, and I'm going to drive looking ahead. Now, if they were 18, if they were 25, if they were 30, I'd say no. But they're kids. What can kids do? I think the news has borne out what kids can do. And these specific kids, maybe they would not have been a problem at all. Maybe they would have been the most polite and wonderful and thankful people in the world if I had done this, but I declined. And I felt bad about declining because, like I said, I had to do a couple things on the way. Adding that stop to it would be a bit of a problem. I'm not going to do the stops with them with me. But they were like, yeah, he's not going to let us go. Okay, yeah, I see you. And by the way, I was finishing loading up, and I looked around, and it's like they disappeared into thin air. So I'm wondering, okay, was this a test, and I failed, or were they moving that fast to get downtown? Because it's cold. And I was thinking, I wouldn't want to be out in that weather, even with the jacket I had on. So did I make the right move, or did I make the wrong move? I don't know.
I think you made the right move for a number of reasons, and I hope I have my streets and avenues right, but it's I think that's 10th Avenue down where the old railroad station used to be and the buses are now.
Yeah, that's where they wanted to go, downtown
to the
bus station.
I was coming down that street one day. Now, at the time, I was employed at Conrail, and I'm coming down the street, and here I see a bunch of boys. There's probably six or seven of them. They're piled up against the fence at the side of the road, and there was a break in the fence, a tear in the fence, something. They were squeezing through and crossing the railroad tracks to get over to the Station Mall area.
Not good.
So I pulled over real quick, wound the window down, said it, and hollered at them, "Hey, guys, stop." You know, well, stop meant the first six all speeded up and got through the crack. One kid froze because he wasn't sure what to do, and I says, "You get in my truck." He got in my truck.
Yeah.
Now, he shouldn't have trusted me.
Right.
But he got in my truck, and I told him, I said, "Look," I said, "that's extremely dangerous. I said, you guys could get killed here." I said, "Where are you going?" He said, "We were trying to go to the station." Well, I said, "I'm going to take you over there." And about 10 feet down the road, I start thinking about me. Now, I've got this young boy that I just forced in my truck, so to speak. And what if he says, you know, anything? I molested him. I took his wallet.
Right,
I took
his
phone. And now I'm going over there, and I'm thinking, I hope I make it, you know?
Yeah.
So I did get him over there. I dropped him off. I gave him a lecture. And I don't know if it made any difference or not, but—
But, you know, as younger people, and not that it precludes us being adults, we do stupid things. Was that a smart move? This was what, late at night, you said?
No, this was late in the afternoon. It was daylight.
Late in the afternoon.
It was daylight.
Okay. Well, I mean, at least there you can see or theoretically hear an oncoming train. But there's a reason they got the fence there.
Yeah.
And, by the way, did they have the crossover then? Or was that closed?
They had the crossover. It may have been closed at that time.
Because people keep defacing the crossover and doing stuff in there that you really don't want to have to clean up. And, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I understand that. I mean, would you pick up a hitchhiker these days? I wouldn't.
No. My wife and I drove across country, well, several times, but the one time we were coming across, there was a hitchhiker, a very attractive woman, short skirt, very, very attractive girl. We passed her.
Yeah.
The next day, she's ahead of me again. We stopped at a motel somewhere for the evening. Coming down the road, here she's ahead of us. She had gotten a ride and made a little better time than I did. And I said to my wife, I said, you know, I would pick up a guy with a mask and a gun before I'd pick that girl up. It just doesn't make sense.
You don't know what's going to happen. You know, it's funny. There was an episode of Adam 12, which was supposedly based on real life events that police had to encounter. And there was a guy who picked up a hitchhiker who was a young lady like that. And at an intersection, she gets out of the car, sees the police car, runs over. This man kidnapped me. He was trying to molest me. And he's completely calm about the whole thing. And the police are like, well, they don't rush to judgment. So what's your side of the story? Well, I can tell you that she's making this all up and I can prove it. Really? Well, of course, it's a Jack Webb drama, so it's all very, you know, rehearsed and stilted in the way they're explaining it. The guy sells recording devices. This is like 1968. He sells recording devices. He has one in his briefcase, which he turned on when she got in the car. And you hear the whole thing. You're going to give me money or I'm going to scream that you molested me. Needless to say, she was then arrested, supposedly based on a real event.
So she didn't know who to trust.
She didn't know who to trust either, but she wasn't exactly being honest with anybody.
She wasn't trustworthy.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. I mean, and here's the thing. I'm thinking, well, what can somebody say about me? But also, 5 against 1, 8, well, they're smaller than you. You can't handle kids. You don't know what they're like.
No, you don't know what's going on.
And it really bugged me because I had that thought. Why can't it just be the situation, yeah, get in the back seat, we'll take you down there? Because it's, like I said, it's cold. I didn't want them to have to walk all the way to there because it was going to take them. They said, it's going to take us 9 minutes to walk because they'd done it before.
Yeah.
But they didn't want to do it in this weather. But also, again, I was surprised. Curfew?
Yeah. I didn't realize that.
I didn't realize that either. So maybe if somebody wants to correct me and say, hey, you're wrong, there is no curfew. I mean, I never thought about it because, frankly, when I was that age, I was with my folks or with my friends, but I was not out by myself unsupervised.
The most unfortunate part about your story there is the fact that it would have been nice to help the kids out.
Yes, I wanted to.
And you think of yourself, but you have to. In today's atmosphere,
yeah.
You have to.
I mean, let's put it this way. In Altoona, the chances, not great. And if it's like New York City or Long Island, no way would I forget that. It's WRTA Weekend. Doug Herendine. We're talking with John Kasin, and the topic is, who do you trust? And we've hashed a few out here, but John, do you have another example of something?
Well, yes. You know, I thought about this on the reverse side. During my career, several times I was in charge of departments and areas, some of them relatively large. And you don't think much about it, but as a supervisor, you have to know who to trust also among your employees. Who's going to get the job done? Who's going to show up? If I give Joe this assignment, do I have to watch him, or mm-hmm. is he going to be able to handle it? And I don't know if the average person thinks about that, but the supervisor is looking for something he can trust, someone he can trust and depend upon to get the job done. He doesn't want to watch the employee each one all the time. He just wants it to happen.
Especially if you have a bunch of employees, you don't want to have to watch them all. You want to trust them to be able to do their job.
That's
not
right.
You address it then, but.
That was emphasized to me. I was in a meeting with Jim Hagan, who was chairman of the board for Conrail at the time. And he gave me a very interesting story. He said, you know, as chairman of the board, people think it's like a big ship. And so Jim Hagan's the mm-hmm. captain. He's up in the wheelhouse.
Yeah.
And he's got this big giant wheel that he turns, and the ship goes right or left. And he said, it doesn't work that way. He says, what they don't realize is there's no wheel up there. Mm-hmm. He said, I may want to go right or left. He says, but everybody on the ship or all the employees have to pull together to get us to go right or left.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of this trust is an issue that's permeated throughout our entire society at all levels because leaders don't always have all the answers. They're trying to get you a direction or a higher position or looking forward or looking more in the distance, but it takes all of us. And they need good employees who they can trust and rely on. So it's kind of a twist on who do you trust. They have the same problem you have. Who do you trust? Who can I give these assignments to that I know it's going to get done?
Well, when I was very young in this business, I was 19. I was on a radio station that covered 13 counties, and it's a weekend afternoon. And I realized we have like 1.2 million listeners on this station at the time. And I'm the only one in this studio. There's only one other person in the building. They're at the AM across the glass. But I'm the only one on that station. I'm 19 years old, and I'm responsible to make sure we don't lose the license, we don't have dead air, the right thing runs at the right time, the commercials get played because they were paid for, and you've got to do that for the advertiser. You got to be honest. And if there's a problem, you've got to log it and get it to the people that can fix it if you can't. I'm thinking, I'm 19 years old, and this station is worth how many millions of dollars, and they're letting me do this. Well, if that doesn't wake you up suddenly and make you really pay attention to want to do it right, Yeah, I don't know much will. Now, I know some people in that situation say, yeah, so what? It's a walk in the park. It's cakewalk. I don't care. I can handle it. It's like, that tells me you really don't have the full picture of just what you're responsible for at that time.
That's right. You're exactly right.
Because I worked with people like that. They had much more of a laissez-faire attitude toward anything.
Yes.
Especially, oh, we're radio. We're just playing. It's like, no, it's a little more than that.
Yeah. Well, see, those are the guys you can't trust.
Or they get a wake-up call somewhere along the line and suddenly realize, I better shape up or I ain't going to be doing this much longer.
Yeah, or they're not doing it much longer. They didn't shape up, so.
Yeah, yeah. I've worked with a few of those who did not work very long with us at that particular place. It's funny. When I was at a different radio station, there was this guy in sales who was really, really Mr. Common Sense about things, and he was good at his job. And we were talking about something that just happened with an employee who just, I won't even get into all the idiocy. But this was a guy who was older than me that had some more experience and that theoretically, and he had a lot more responsibility than I did. And he just royally took advantage of all of it and just run roughshod. And he got himself booted out of the place. He said, oh, it doesn't matter. I found a better job. And he mentioned the station. And I said, yeah, he won't be there 6 months. He was there about a month before they canned him as well because he tried the same stuff there. And the guy with common sense said, you really haven't worked outside of radio, have you? I says, no, outside of, part-time job when I was a teenager. No, I've always been around. He says, trust me, I've been in several other jobs. There are people like this in all of them. It's not because my thought was, radio attracts this kind of nutbag that's going to cause problems. And he says, no, they're in everything.
No, you're absolutely right. It's the personality type, not the profession. I mean, there's doctors, priests, workers on the dock, whatever there are. There's those same personalities exist at all levels. And the one thing I noticed in my career, and I've known many people who were extremely intelligent and very proficient at whatever their jobs were, but most of them didn't have the characteristics that we're talking about that are highly desirable. I've never seen people get fired for any – most of the people I saw get fired or lose their job, lost their job, not that they couldn't do their job. Mm-hmm. They couldn't handle aspects outside of their job. In other words, they weren't dependable. They weren't trustworthy. You couldn't count on them. You couldn't believe their word. They might know all the buttons to push.
Yeah.
But they still can't fit in with the system and make the – our job in – any of our jobs in any profession we are is to not only do our job but to make sure the whole ball keeps rolling.
Yes.
And if we're an impediment to that ball – then we're not part of the team.
Although I would say in that same specific job, more than one person, there was a supervisor for the entire company, and we did not get along at all. And several people explained the same thing to me, saying that the guy was a micromanager, and he didn't care about what you thought. You were not hired to think. You were hired to do, and if he said jump, you ask how high. I don't operate well that way, especially if he's, messing things up and he doesn't care about A, B, C, and D. He just wants E, and E is going to screw up A, B, C, and D. And a coworker or a guy who knew that this guy said, you don't understand. He hires people who don't know where the bathroom is or when to go, and they always have to ask permission. That's what he likes.
Yes.
That's not me. And that was not most of the people I worked with. So most of the people parted ways with that organization, not necessarily under their own steam, but when I almost made it a week shy of 5 years, people said, you managed to stay there 5 years. Wow.
Yeah.
So it was like, but I mean, the trust goes both ways. I walked into that place trusting everybody because, well, they're the boss. They know what they're doing. And when they tell you five contradictory things and you will do what they say, or when seven people all tell you I'm your boss, you listen to me, you don't trust any of them after a while. And it's like, how do you get into this situation? Like you said about taking a job earlier.
Well, that's, I guess that's the part about life experience. Until you get that life experience and survive, then you can make good judgments.
I suppose. It's just because, like I said, when I was on that station, 19 years old, they trusted me to do that.
Yep.
And I didn't mess it up, thankfully. Yep. Not because I'm all that great. It's just by the grace of God and by the way my parents raised me, I managed not to to mess things up. But I don't know. It depends. Can you trust people who don't take anything seriously?
Well, no, if they don't. I take everything seriously. I mean,
but you have a lot of fun with things. If anybody reads your stuff in the mirror, they know that.
Yes, I do. I try to enjoy life. I can't control life. I've got to live within life, and I control it the best I can, but I try to enjoy it. I find funny things about everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I find funny things about very serious things. Why not?
Because there are so many absurdities.
You got to roll with it. So
we have to take a break. We're talking with John Kasin. Who do you trust is the topic. By the way, just as an aside, as Paul Harvey said, partly personal, I was talking with somebody recently who was at a business, and somebody else there is having something done for them at that business, and they start talking about how he loves listening to the radio, especially WRTA. And he said, there was this one guy I loved listening to on the station for years. And the person who's telling me the story said, Dave Barger. Well, yeah, I love Dave Barger, but that's not him. I'm trying to think of the guy's name. Scott Barger. Well, no, I mentioned a few other people who worked here. And he remembered it. Barry Ickes. Interestingly, this person was related to Barry Ickes. So I said, yeah, we miss him too. So to the gentleman who was having this conversation, number one, thank you for still listening to WRTA for all these years. And yeah, we miss Barry Ickes and Dave Barger and all those people as well. But thanks for listening. It's WRTA weekend. Doug Herendeen, the colonies are on hiatus. They will be back next month. John Kasin is with us. Who do you trust is the topic here. And do you trust your own eyes?
No. I hate to say this. I don't trust much of anything. I mean, Reagan, as you remember, said, trust but verify.
Yeah.
So that's where I am. I mean, I'll believe you, but I'm going to make sure you're right.
And I'm not talking about something on the internet. We can talk about that later if we have time. But I'm not going to say where this was specifically because I'll get like five people calling saying, hey, that was me. No, you're not going to know specifically. Some months ago, I'm sitting at a light. It's three lanes. There's a lane that will turn left. The right lane can go forward or right. I'm in the center. And I'm coming up to the red light. There's a vehicle to my right. There's a vehicle to my left. And as I'm about to pull up, even with them, at the line on the pavement, a car comes from the left and slams right into the one that's waiting to turn left. And I'm like, he just hit him. He went right into the guy's lane and smacked into him. The guy in the vehicle to my right gets out, goes over to both and says, are you okay? I give him points for that, checking on both. He says, I've got a dash cam. I saw it all. This guy here, and he points to the guy who had not moved and could not move because he had the red light. He's the one that hit you. And I thought to myself, that's not what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had to be somewhere. Not right that second, so I'm not going to, gun it and go. I'm waiting to see how this, and also the guy's walking back and forth. I don't want to hit him. So I realized the light has changed several times now. He's leaving his truck in the right lane. The other truck is here, and the other vehicle is against that vehicle. I'm the only one that can move under my own power. Nobody on the right lane of me can get by. Nobody on the left lane can, except this one guy who decides he's going to stick his nose in between me and the vehicle that was hit. And I realize there's not enough space there. So before he got to the point where I could not move and then nobody's going to move for hours, the light changed. I had the green. I went.
Mm-hmm.
Because he says, well, I've got it all on tape. And I'm thinking, okay. If you've got it all on tape or whatever it is, or little disc in your dash cam, you want to explain to me how on the right side of me you saw what happened on the left side of that vehicle, especially since the vehicle that was hit did nothing except sit at a red light. But he's like, nope, you're at fault. The guy that hit you is not at fault. So do you trust your own eyes? Because to me, I thought I should sit here and give somebody my personal information. But I realize now there's a whole line of backup behind me, too. If I, the guy trying to get in front of us, it's going to block me. I go, he goes, the whole line of traffic now is going down the center lane and then turning left or right or going straight. And I, of course, I never know what happened after that.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting there thinking, wait, how did you see it differently than me? And this made me think about people on juries. X, Y, Z happened. And then you have a conversation with the other jurors. Well, Y, Z, X happened. That's not what they said. Yeah, but that's what it means. I've never made it to a jury. I've been called to sit and wait and wait and wait and get excused. But it's like, how could I see one thing and the other guy was sitting right there and he saw something exact opposite?
Well, that's a very good point. I've sat on several juries, and it's amazing how you can, as you're illustrating very well, sit in the same room, see or hear the same statements, and come out with an entirely different idea of what really happened. So I guess that all adds up to the same thing. You have to be very careful. You have to be very analytical. You have to make up your own mind. And you have to have the principles to not vary from that decision unless it can be proven. So,
yeah. I mean, I remember one time I was out with my friend and his daughter, and she left her wallet somewhere. And I thought I saw it in a certain place. No, we found it in another store. I saw her put it down, but when I wasn't looking, she picked it back up. So I thought it must be that store. No, it was the store after that where she left it. Yeah. She was kind of young at the time, and she made that mistake. But I was sure it was that the first store. It was the second.
Yeah. Well, those things happen all the time. I opened up our kitchen drawer this morning, and our pizza cutter had a cover on it, which it should have a cover on it. And I asked my wife, I said, wait a minute, when we put it away the other night, I couldn't find the cover. Where did you find it? And then she told me where she found it, and I said, that's impossible. I looked there, and that's my own kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, I should have been able to see it. So, no, you really have to verify everything.
Yeah. I'll give you another example. Do you know what dynamic pricing is?
Dynamic pricing?
Dynamic pricing. Do you know what that is?
I don't know that exact term. This means rising prices, which is happening all the time.
Well, do you use Amazon?
Yes.
Okay. Based on your profile online, if you go look at a galvanized wing nut, just to pick something, the price may be $10 for you. Based on my profile, if I go to Amazon, it may be $8 for me because of past purchases, because of credit score, or other things I've done online. Whatever my profile, it's like, oh, this guy can afford 10, so let's soak him for 10. This guy, he'll probably pay 8. And then if I don't pay it, maybe they come back later and say, hey, we'll give you a special discount, 7 for you. But no discount for you because they think, you know, you can definitely afford 10. Mm. And that's been going on Amazon and other websites for some time. And some district attorneys are looking into it to say, hey, that's not fair. And the sites are like, no, well, really, it's fair. One guy can afford to pay more than the other. Now, and Kohl's was one of the first places that had the little LCD price tags on everything, but they really weren't dynamic pricing. They were just doing it to that way if they had a change of price or whatever, from a sale to whatever, they would do it. But now a lot of stores, and these are national chains, whether it be supermarkets or department stores, you carry a little spy on you all day long. It's called your phone. Do you have a cell phone?
I have a cell phone. It's on my desk, and I don't know how to operate it. And I haven't touched it since it was purchased.
Man, I admire you. My first cell phone was because Dave decided, Dave Barger, who owned WRT at the time, we all need cell phones, so he got us a deal. We had to pay a minimal amount, but he got us the phones. And they were flip phones. I figured, well, I don't need anything more than this. And then eventually the carrier said, no, we have to upgrade you all to a smartphone. Whether you like it or not, you're getting a smartphone. We're getting rid of the flip phones. And a lot of us would just leave them in the drawer, except Dave kind of said, you know, I'm kind of helping to pay for these. Would you please carry them all the time? And he shamed us on that a couple of times, nicely. So we started to do that. But most of us have the little spy right on us all the time in our back pocket or in the little carrier. So you walk by a shelf, and as you're coming, oh, this is something that you've bought 50 times before. Well, for you, it's going to be a buck more. Go away, and then a minute later, the price changes on the little price tag because somebody else is coming by. Oh, they bought it once. We want to encourage them to buy it more, and they usually buy this brand, so we'll drop the price by a dollar, and the other one goes up by a dollar. Or you buy it, you see it on the shelf, you get to the checkout, it has changed since you brought it from the shelf to the checkout. Now it's not what it was when you saw it. And this is a thing that's coming to a lot of big box stores. It's not here yet. You'll probably see it at like Walmart and a bunch of other places very soon. And I'm sure in metropolitan areas they already have it there. What do you think about that?
That's an incredible story. I had no idea that was happening to the degree that you're saying. But it makes some sense because I'm not a shopper. My wife takes care of pretty much everything. But when we're researching everything, what she always does, she'll look these things up and she'll say, compare these, see what you think. And I will do that. And then I always check for the price. Then I search again for a lower price. Uh-huh. What happens to me personally is when I'm looking at anything, and I've been noticing it lately, is I start getting other offers from other places.
Oh, yeah.
And the prices are constantly changing. Now, we have bluebird houses on my property, and we feed the bluebirds. Bluebirds now are raising their young. They're just about over that. For the first hatching, but you buy millworms. Millworms are extremely expensive when you buy them to feed the bluebirds.
So okay.
You buy 5 pounds of millworms, which millworms don't weigh a lot, so you get a small bag. It's $25, and I said, no, I don't get much meat off a bluebird anyway. I said so. I said, there's got to be something better than this.
Don't write letters. Nobody writes letters. Don't send angry emails anyway.
So anyway, now I'm buying them in 10 and 20-pound bags, which now it's a bag like this for less money. And but I keep getting millworm pretty soon. I mean, they'll be bringing them in a truck. But it's interesting because if you're not paying attention to the price.
Yeah.
You're going to get caught. You spend too much money.
I was visiting friends one time. We're at the supermarket. I do this all the time. I look at the little tag that tells you what it is per ounce, per pound, whatever it is, per square feet, whatever. And I think sometimes they count on our math skills being the typical American, not good. And he would just buy whatever. And I explained to him, no, buy this one. It's cheaper, meaning less expensive. Buy this one, it's cheaper. It's the same brand, but you buy more of it, you get a better deal. Here, look at the price, and da-da-da-da-da, and this is on sale. And it was like it was a new concept to him because his thought was, you need it, grab it, throw it in the cart.
Yes.
And his wife is like, wait a minute, he's right, because she gets out a calculator and does the thing. He's absolutely right. This saves us money if we buy this as opposed to that. And he's like, I don't have time for this. He wasn't upset. He was just like, no, but I have to sit here and think? No, just throw it in the cart.
That's amazing because everybody needs money to live. Otherwise, nobody would be working.
Yeah.
But if you need money to live, the biggest trick is managing your money. So why would you give money away
right.
for no reason? And that's exactly what you're doing.
Yeah.
And people do it every day.
Now, think about it. If you buy 50, because they get a larger household than I do, say they buy 50 items. And say on 25 of those items, they could have saved a dollar if they bought a different variation of the same product. You just blew $25.
That's exactly right.
You do that every week, you're talking real money there.
That's you. It is real money.
Yeah.
That's a people thing that people don't seem to understand. The money that I save, I always call it free money.
Okay.
Because if I would have spent it and bought the more expensive mealworms,
yeah,
I'd have had less money.
Yeah.
When I went to the grocery store to buy food for me or if I went out for dinner. So it's free money. Yet people give free money away all the time. If you were taking money out of their wallet, they'd call the cops.
Yeah.
But they do it voluntarily. It's amazing.
I worked with a woman one time who refused to get a supermarket shopper card. I don't want them tracking me. Well, are you paying with a credit card? Yeah, they're probably tracking you anyway.
Yeah.
But I look at what I save, like... The other week, I actually saved $28 from what the retail price was by using the shopper card and the coupons and buying a certain configuration. $28 less.
Yep.
And I was only buying like, you know, my final total was like, you know, $58, but it would have been $25, $28 more. Why would I give them the money on that? They're going to sell that information anyway.
Oh, yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, why do they even give out credit cards? I mean... People give you, they don't give you credit cards because they like you. They give you credit cards so you use them to buy whatever the merchandise is you need that you can't afford. And now they're going to charge you 30% interest next month. I mean, it's crazy.
And even if you pay it off, they charge 3.4% to the merchant. And don't think they don't include that in their prices to everybody.
Absolutely.
As they should, by the way.
Yes, absolutely.
That's why some give a discount for cash.
Well, see, a lot of places, especially restaurants now, are adding if you have a meal out and you use a credit card, they charge you 4% more.
Right, right.
And they do, and it's good. They have a sign right there.
Oh,
says,
but I'm getting cash back. More. Yeah, how much? 1%. Well, guess what? If they're charging you 4%, pay cash, you're going to save the money.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's WRTA Weekend. Doug Herendeen, our guest is John Kasin. Who do you trust is what we're talking about. Do you trust AI? You know, artificial intelligence?
Oh, no. No, I don't trust anything like that. But... I want to qualify that. That's AI is like a hammer. It's a tool.
Mm-hmm.
If you can drive a nail with a hammer, you can also break your thumb.
Yes.
It's kind of your choice. And I see there's a panic about AI. It's going to take over the world. It's going to do all these bad things. No, we're still in control of it. Now, we are not in control of some of the people who are going to use it to try to take over the world.
Those are the people I don't trust.
Yeah, there you go. So I was going to say that gets us right back to the topic. Who do you trust? AI is going to be a valuable tool, but not in all the ways it's going to be used. We have to differentiate that as individuals.
Yeah. I mean, AI is only as good as the people that use it. Garbage in, garbage out. Geico.
Absolutely.
There are instances, and we've been seeing this lately, there was a woman who... was accused of stealing an Amazon package, taking it off of somebody's front porch. Well, how did the cop find her? He shows up at the house one day, knocks on the door. Hey, we have proof you stole a package. We have you on camera doing it. Really? Yeah, we tracked your car 20 times past that same road in the last month, so we know you drive by it every day, and we've got video of you taking the package. Well... she was able to get the same information from the manufacturer of the system that is tracking your car because it's through the car that the manufacturer of the car. Her husband was driving up and down those roads, those 20 trips. She wasn't. And he would not show her the footage of her supposedly doing it. But one of the news stations, when she contacted them, because the cops are like, well, you know, you can come with me now or I can subpoena you or I'm going to write you a ticket. All it's like, get off my front porch. First off, you're out of your jurisdiction. You live in that town. You're a cop for that town. I live in a different town. You're telling me that you have proof I stole. Fine. Charge me with it. Well, we'll do that if you don't want to pay this fine. Go ahead, charge me for it. And they wouldn't charge her. And eventually the TV station got a hold of it. They look at the video. It looks nothing like her. It's a blonde woman, but it doesn't look a thing like her. Mm-hmm. But it's a similar car to what her husband drives.
Yep.
But the point was, the cop puts two and two together and gets 17.
Yep, Yep.
And shows up on her door with no warrant, no subpoena, saying, yep, you got to deal with me now because we have proof you stole this package off of somebody's front porch.
Yep. Well, it wasn't too long ago. I'm sure you remember this, but people were getting notices of parking violations from Philadelphia, for example.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, so they're doing that, and somebody pays, and so that's money in their pocket. But no,
this is not a scam. This was actually Philadelphia doing it.
Yes,
they just
was.
Send them out. It's like, well, you know, whoever pays us, we're making extra money.
That's right. Somebody had to do it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there's a couple people that have been. There was a guy arrested on child luring in Florida man, except this Florida man wasn't the problem. He lived 300 miles away from the town where this supposedly happened, but they had him on video.
Yeah.
Guess what? You look at the video, you look at him, it's like it's a caricature of Mr. Incredible compared to him.
Yeah.
And he sat in jail for a couple of months, and people were treating him, you were luring children? Well, you know. And they were able to prove that he was 300 miles away at the time. He'd never been to the town.
Yeah.
So he's suing the police now for that, and he's suing the AI providers. And they're like, hey, well, you know, it told us this, so we had to go with that. It's like, No, you could have investigated it a little better. It's like there was a woman in Tennessee. She was arrested on a warrant from North Dakota because somebody in North Dakota used AI, matched her up with somebody who was kiting checks. And she'd never been to North Dakota, but didn't matter. They managed to arrest her at gunpoint in front of her grandchildren, hold her for months in Tennessee jail. They extradite her to North Dakota, where she sits for another month. They have the hearing, and in 10 minutes, her attorney was able to prove that she'd never been there, and she was at this. All this could have been handled when she was still in jail in Tennessee. Oh, and by the way, they arrested her in, like, August or early September, so she's dressed for that. It's now the day before Christmas, like 4 p.m. It's Christmas Eve. They throw her out on the street and say, oh, you're innocent. Okay, bye, see you. Well, how am I supposed? That's your problem.
Yeah.
And luckily, some churches and some other charities stepped in to get her back there.
Yeah.
So who do you trust?
Well, I guess what we're saying is you can't trust anybody. You have to make sure of everything.
All right, here's one. And some people will laugh. I would not be one of them. Do you trust God?
Well, that's a heavy question.
Yeah, we have 3 minutes to discuss the heavy question.
Well, I have to ask, if you believe in God, then you have to trust Him. I wouldn't know what else to. I don't think you could do the two things. I don't think you could do one of the two things. Because if you don't trust Him, then why do you believe in Him?
Yeah. See, the thing is, I would trust God before anybody on earth.
Yeah.
Sorry. And some people are going to point and laugh and say, you fool, you believe in the spaghetti monster in the sky. No, I believe in God.
Yeah.
And I do believe in every one of these circumstances, no matter how idiotic somebody has been to somebody, they're going to get theirs, just like we're all going to get whatever's coming to us.
Yeah.
I mean, there has to be an ultimate justice somewhere that you trust. And that's about as ultimate as you get, isn't it?
Yes. And, you know, when you speak of God and is there a God, I think the closer you get to nature, the more difficult it is not to believe that there's a God. I mean,
I've heard that from a lot. When I've been out in nature, it does seem a lot closer.
When I say that, when you look at the intricacy of what has been created, something created this, the universe as we know it, the world as we know it, it's impossible for me to think it happened by accident.
I still remember Gil Gross filling in for Paul Harvey years ago, and they were talking about scientists had discovered that they had, now they believe, complete proof of the Big Bang, and that's what started the universe, but they don't know what started the Big Bang. And he paused, he said, well, who do you think?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. When you look at so many, I mean, just look. I'm looking past you. I'm looking at the monitor. I'm seeing the colors. I'm seeing everything move. I mean, there's a lot happening here.
Yeah.
It's very intricate.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my eye. You know, everybody hopefully has two of them. is extremely intricate for that. That happened by accident?
Yeah.
I mean, that's hard for me to comprehend.
I don't know that we solved anything in this, but I think it was a good discussion. John Kasin, thank you very much.
Thank you, Doug.
We will have a podcast of this program up at WRTA.com a little bit later today, if the computer systems work and post it the way they're supposed to. And it'll be on our Facebook page. If you want to leave any comments, critical or uncritical, or you're full of it, or no, that makes good sense, do that at the WRTA Weekend page. John Kasin, thanks very much.
Thank you, Doug.